Welcome back to For All the Saints. It's me, Paul Sutton, just here by myself today. I'm recording this next episode in our series on the Bible's teaching about children. So far in this whole series, we've really spent the first few episodes speaking about the Bible's idea of the status of children, where they fit into creation, sin, salvation, that sort of thing. And then in the last couple of episodes, we've begun to address some of the implications of that, starting with baptism, which makes sense. We might think about how baptism fits into the status of children. Now we're moving on to a second area of that, which I hope we'll cover over the next two or three episodes, which is how children fit into the church. And I want to make the case that we should encourage children of all ages to join in with the regular worship of the gathered church. That's my thesis for today, perhaps a controversial one, but I hope you'll feel as we work through the biblical texts by the end of it that it's, yes, a difficult one, but a kind of obvious thesis in a way. Let's start with the most important thing of all. God is the best. Being with God, knowing God, coming before God, being in relationship with God is what we were made for, and it is what we truly are most thrilled and fulfilled by doing. The psalmist has so many things to say about this. Let me just read a few verses about it. Psalm 27, verse 4. One thing have I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple. Psalm 42, verses 1 and 2. As a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Psalm 73, 25 and 28. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. And then verse 28. For me, it is good to be near God. So that's just a little flavor of the Old Testament idea, not just the Old Testament, the biblical idea expressed in the Psalms, that it is good to be with God, the very best thing, the thing which brings us the greatest and deepest joy and fulfillment is to be near God. Now you might say, well, hang on, that's an Old Testament thing. They worshipped at Jerusalem, and now we worship in spirit and truth. I want to say it's definitely not just an Old Testament thing. If anything, the New Testament teaches that the worship of New Testament Christians, the gathered worship of New Testament Christians, is even better than that of the Old Testament. The best passage on this, or clearest passage, I think, is in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 describes how in the past, at Mount Sinai, yes, people did get to come before God, and it was awesome, but it was awesome in the sense of terrifying. And they begged, in fact, that God would stop speaking to them. But by contrast with that, Hebrews 12, 22, you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. Now, there are a number of different things within both the preceding verses that talk about Mount Sinai and those verses themselves, which point to this being talking about a gathered grouping of the church. This isn't talking about you individually, personally, although that is true, that we are individually, personally seated with Christ at the right hand of the Father. But it's saying that you have come, as we have gathered together, not in a gathering like that gathering at the foot of Mount Sinai, but to this glorious, invisible gathering not only of the angels and the dead and of God himself, but of us with Jesus. You have come, verse 24, to Jesus. Now that, I think, plays in quite a punchy, poignant way to what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 19, verse 14. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, but to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." When Jesus was speaking about that, rebuking his disciples, he was actually saying that, let those little children who are over there, just a few meters away from me, come and sit on my lap that I can bless them, then, you know, they can go on their way. We can't sit, our children can't sit on Jesus' lap. They could have done 2,000 years ago if they'd been in the right place. But that doesn't mean that they can't come to him. When we gather as at Mount Zion, the invisible thing that's going on as we gather as the church, we are coming to Jesus. Let the little children come to me. Let me give a few more biblical examples of that before talking about, I suppose, the kind of implications of it. Firstly, from the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy chapter 31, Moses is laying out some of the rules for the festivals of Israel and says, at the end of every 7 years, at the set time in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, and little ones, and the sojourner within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, and be careful to do all the words of this law, and that their children, who have not known it, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God. Something about the gathering of worship is designed to be passing on the baton repeatedly over the course of someone's life, that their children and then their children might walk in the same ways and hear and learn to fear the Lord your God. Joel chapter 2 says, blow the trumpet in Zion, consecrate a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the people, consecrate the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children, even nursing infants. Again, I don't think this is just in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 21, the chief priests and the scribes are outraged at something that they saw around Jesus. When the chief priests and the scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, and the children crying out in the temple, Hosanna to the Son of David, they were indignant, and they said to him, do you hear what these are saying? And Jesus said to them, yes, have you never read? Out of the mouth of infants and nursing babies, you have prepared praise. Jesus was saying, as I mentioned a couple of episodes back, that even babies, even infants, those who are mentioned in Psalm 8, they, as they cry out, maybe with a lack or a deficiency of understanding, but as they cry out true things in praise, Hosanna to the Son of David, they're wiser than even the scribes and teachers of the law. Think again of many of Jesus's teachings that are recorded in the Gospels. Think of feeding the 5,000 and that boy whose name is lost to history, who shared his five loaves and two fishes. He was there hearing Jesus teaching, evidently teaching for such a long time that people needed food. Think of the book of Ephesians, a letter which, like all the other letters of the New Testament, would have been designed to and expected to be read aloud. But that's a letter that includes instruction directly to children. Verse 1 of chapter 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord. So that's my biblical case for why we should encourage children of all ages to join in with the regular worship of the gathered church. Let me just move on really to the practicalities and really what the plan is as we start this new church in the summer, All Saints Exeter. It is, surprise, surprise, to encourage children of all ages to join in with the regular worship of the gathered church. Now, I recognize the challenge and the learning curve of that and how that will be a difficulty, not just to parents, not just to children, but to everyone else as well. And that's why I wanted to talk about it now, that we might have time to pray about it and talk about it and prepare well for it. I think we will need to have a creche with an audio link for parents or perhaps helpers who are there. And rather than that creche just being for babies, I suggest that it's a creche that has a wider span that maybe goes up to, say, age 7 or something like that. So that if there are younger children, you think, I just can't quite yet figure out how, or I'm not yet convinced, or whatever else it might be, that they can be in the regular worship of the gathered church, then they can at least be nearby. That doesn't mean we won't have any instruction for children, any specific age-appropriate teaching. Rather, we'll have a Sunday school for age 3 up to, I guess, age 18 in different groups that's appropriate to them before the church service. So more details to follow on that, because I can't figure out the details of it at this stage, but we will try to do that right from the start. So that's the plan. Let me just talk about some applications of this teaching. Firstly, we all need to learn to love to worship God. John Piper has some very convicting words on this in an article that I'll mention at the end. He says, the greatest stumbling block for children in worship is that their parents do not cherish the hour. Children can feel the difference between duty and delight. Therefore, the first and most important job of a parent is to fall in love with the worship of God. You can't impart what you don't possess. Children should see how mum and dad bow their heads in earnest prayer. They should see how mum and dad sing praise to God with joy in their faces, and how they listen hungrily to his word. They should catch the spirit of their parents meeting the living God. Now, I find that immensely challenging. In some ways, discouraging to hear. And I think I'd probably want to add a little bit of nuance to say, although children can feel the duty, the difference between duty and delight, and that is a very important difference to overcome, if you like. Nevertheless, one of the things that we show to children as we go to church regularly, as every week we are there and we come before God because that's what we do on Sundays, we are showing them throughout their whole childhood that this is something that matters to us. Having said that, we need to learn to love the worship of God. We need to learn to enjoy it. We need to expect to be meeting with God, to be transformed and challenged and comforted by Him. Worship is not meant to be easy. How easy it is for us to think that we can come to church a bit like we go to the cinema. The lights go down, and we sit back and relax and enjoy the entertainment. I don't think it's like the cinema. I don't really think it's like the gym either, but it's more like the gym in that you go to the gym expecting to work, expecting to enjoy it, expecting to benefit from it. But worship, like the gym, is not meant to be easy. But that doesn't mean it isn't meant to be joyous. Secondly, if this is true, we want children to be growing into the corporate gathered worship of God, then this ought to be a key goal of any church's children's work. And in fact, more broadly than that, a goal of our Christian parenting. Maybe goal's not the right word. Maybe it's a metric of it. But I think it's both. I think as we're seeing children making a transition into joining in with the gathered worship of God and seeing them enjoy that, seeing them growing in that, seeing them treasuring it more and more, that's a pretty clear goal, a pretty clear indication that children's work is bearing fruit. Parenting is bearing fruit. Thirdly, this I suppose is something more for me. If this is right, then we need to make services accessible, or at least accessible-ish. Jesus, after all, said, "Do not hinder the children." I don't think that means that everything has to be geared around the interests and capacities of a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old. I don't know quite where you would put that number in terms of where it is. But it does mean working hard to make services accessible and possible for young children to grow in their appreciation of. Fourthly, we have to practice these things. And the most obvious place to practice is in our family times of prayer. If that's something you're a parent and something you have, then I really encourage you to think of that as, among other things, a way of practicing for church and enjoying that. And I'll talk about that more in the next episode. Fifthly, perhaps this is the most important thing. We need to recognize how desperately we are in need of God's grace. We need to be realistic about how slow our progress is. We need not to be impatient with the work of God, but recognizing that it is His work, to be persistent in pleading with Him to do the work in us. You would see if you came and sat with us on a Sunday, or if you came to our family prayers day by day, that we are certainly in need of grace. Our family is, and I take it every family is. That's precisely the reason why we come before God at all. I want you to know that I know that we certainly need grace. Whether that's you as a child, you as a parent of a child, you as somebody who doesn't have children, you as somebody who has children who've grown up, for the whole church, we'll need to be gracious towards one another, and we need God's grace to do that. Lastly, let me just mention a few materials that I found helpful as I've thought about these questions, and I'll put these in a link in the notes to this episode. Probably the best one-stop shop for this is a book by Jason Hilopoulos, who is a colleague of the American pastor and writer Kevin DeYoung, who wrote a book called Let the Children Worship. So I really recommend that. Very short book, weirdly psychedelic cover, but don't let that put you off. And if you want to get a taster for that book, there's an article that he wrote on the Gospel Coalition website, which is also, I suppose, summarizing and giving a taster for what's inside that book. Again, just a really gracious and wise, but earnest and excited book. Another place you could go would be a sermon series by our old friend Peter Leach, who you may remember from a few episodes back. When Peter's church in Derby moved from not having children in the church or not encouraging them to be in the church gathered service, he preached a 3-part series on some of the stuff we've covered in this episode, but much, much more than that. You can either listen to that, and I'll put a link to that, or you can read it. He put 3 articles of it summarized and written out on his blog. I mentioned earlier on an article by John Piper, the American pastor, now retired. This is an article that he wrote when he first became the pastor of Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis. And it's, I have to say, quite a punchy article. So I give you that sort of warning if you read it, but it's punchy in a good way, inspiring, and I think emphasizes in a really wonderful way that worshiping God is meant to be a glorious and joyous thing, and that's why we want children to be there with us. Well, let me wrap up by mentioning trailering what we're going to come to next. I mentioned already that next time we'll speak about family worship and what that might be like, but after that, we'll have someone on to answer some objections that may well have come up to you as you've been listening to this. Objections like, well, surely children need age-appropriate teaching, or what about outsiders? Isn't this going to hinder the mission of the church? Or this is just too hard. I don't think I can do this. So do get in touch between now and then if you like. Paul@allsaintsexeter.org. But in a couple of weeks' time, we'll come back to this topic and address those objections.